going on, podcast world? This is Eric Seals, and you are listening to A Filmmaker's Guide to Freelancing. Super excited to talk to you about this episode because I feel like I get a lot of questions, not only about this particular project, but how it happened, how I got to it. So we're going to get into that. Make sure you're following me on all the social mediums on the internet. You can definitely find me on Instagram, on YouTube, on LinkedIn. I'm staying active so you can find out what's going on in the Midwest side of the streets. So this whole episode of the podcast is about the Tulsa Massacre documentary that was on the History Channel. I think that was 21. Yeah, I think that was 2021. I was one of the DPs for that project. There was two DPs. And truth be told, I didn't know that I was going to be one of the DPs until much later, but we'll get into that shortly. So the way that this came about was I had recently finished a documentary where I was the DP called Freedom Hill. It was for Rasita Cox, who formerly worked at DigiFay. And now she was doing her own thing, making her own films, freelancing. And she had reached out to me about being the DP for this project. And this is 2020. This is 2020 when we filmed Freedom Hill. So the years are kind of important. And when she reached out and asked me about being the DP for the project, I was like, but I'm not a DP. And she's like, yes, you are. She's like, yes, you are. You just don't know it yet. And I was like, what? What's this girl talking about? But I'm like, you want me to DP for it? Sure. Great. Whatever. And I didn't think that she was serious because she asked me like 8 months in advance. Long story short, I end up DPing her film, which won numerous awards. And really the beginning of my DP career, where when people would ask me, I can clearly say I'm a DP. Before that, I'd be like, I'm an editor, I'm a business owner, I'm a freelancer, I was a creative artist. I said I did everything under the sun. This is the first time when I can say I feel like I found my calling. Though I loved editing and I have a passion for editing and telling stories, I don't like to be in an edit room all day, 10 hours, 5 days out of the week. I need to get outside. And so it's important to know about Freedom Hill, because if it wasn't for Freedom Hill, which was a project that, and even Rasita will admit to this, there was no budget at the time. It was a very low budget. There was enough budget to get me to North Carolina. There was enough budget to get my gas to get down there, my hotel, and I'm going to say a little bit of stipend, because she didn't have the full money to do the whole project. But we had plenty of money for Bojangles, because we ate Bojangles like 8 times a day. That was crafty, was Bojangles. And so part of the reason I did that is, one, knowing her personally. I've worked with her. We have a great working relationship. And I had a passion for the story that she was going to tell. Plus, if I'm going to do this DP thing, I probably need to get some films under my belt. And so my first DP, like true DP project, like there's other projects that I filmed where I was behind the camera and I was camera operating, but this is the first one where I felt like I was a true DP, where there's a difference between a videographer, a camera operator, a cinematographer, so to speak, and a DP. And this is the first time where I really felt like I was the DP. And a few months go by and Rasita reaches out to me and says, hey, someone I know is working on another project and they want you to, you know, want to see if you're available. Now, this was in the middle of COVID, and so I wasn't getting that many requests to be in the field. And the funny thing is, when they reached out to me, they didn't tell me too much about the project. I didn't know it was about the Tulsa Massacre when I first learned about it. And they didn't know how many days, they didn't know when it was going to be starting. And it's funny, a lot of the projects that I work on a high level, or the highest level of projects that I've worked on, there's a lot of gray area at the beginning. They're figuring out a lot of stuff. And that's because there's so many moving pieces that they don't know where you fit in yet, but they know they need you. And so I was figuring out the dates and more info about the project. And then they start sending me examples of previous interviews that they did. And then I finally found out what the project was for. I don't think I knew it was for the History Channel at first. And usually when people reach out to me, I don't ask because I don't care. I'm going to do my best regardless. So it doesn't matter if it's for you know, a short film that's not going to see the light of day, or if it's for a large cable news network, I'm still coming with my best. And I eventually found out what the topic was on, and I'm like, man, they're probably going to have a lot of money for this, and it's going to be a big team. And I was quickly, you know, surprised that the team that we had for the Tulsa Massacre, though bigger, not much larger than what we had for Freedom Hill, which had no budget. And I think that's just because the landscape is changing and people are realizing that they'd rather have smaller teams, they can move quicker, and a lot of people are used to doing multiple stuff, lighting, audio, directing, and all that stuff. So, yes, we had an audio person. We had an audio recordist. We had an AC that was helping me with lighting, but we didn't have a gaffer. We had a PA, and we had a director and a producer who on the project. So the producer was mostly working with logistics and making sure people were there were supposed to be. The director was getting prepped for each interview, making sure they're hitting the right topics. My role was camera placement, lighting, and directing the team that we had for, you know, the interviews, because it was mostly interviews, a little bit of B-roll, a little bit of verite. And then the AC was helping me with lighting and everything with the camera, and our PA was doing everything under the bus. So it was a tightly knit group. It was a great team. Everybody worked well together, but I was surprised. And I would say for those who want to DP, do not assume that if you're working on a large scale project, as far as the topic, the network, the production company, it doesn't mean that you're going to have a large team. Your team might be no different than when you had a student project. That's just how it is. Sometimes you have a large team, but especially for documentaries, you'll be surprised. It's relatively a small team that goes out. So one of the unique things about this project was we had some filming in Chicago, and then we had some filming in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And so we did the filming in Chicago with my Sony FX9. I had recently bought it at that point. And it's funny, some of those are my favorite interviews that we did. But that was just one day of filming. When we went to Tulsa, they wanted me to shoot on the same camera that they use in New York for the other interviews, which was the Amira. And I had never filmed on that before. But of course, when they've asked me, have you filmed on this camera? The answer was yes, I use it all the time. And then I scoured the internet for every Amira video that you can find on the internet. I definitely use MZ because they had a tutorial about how to use the camera, but plenty of YouTube clips to learn, because I'm all about YouTube University. And the truth is, if you know how to operate one camera, you know how to use them all. They're just slightly different. So I found the differences between the cameras, and I was excited to use it because that's like one of the most popular documentary cameras out there. And so I wanted to see what it was like working with it. So I talked to their production team. I think it wasn't their production coordinator. I forget the position, but the person who's managing all the equipment. And he's like, hey, what lenses do you want? What camera? What lights? We're going to ship everything to Oklahoma for you, which was weird for me. But they ended up shipping all the equipment down there. And obviously, they have crazy cases to make sure it stays safe. And so I didn't have to worry about any of the equipment. Now, I brought my FX9 just in case, because I always like it as a backup, even when I'm using somebody else's equipment. But I didn't have to use my own stuff. I ended up deciding to drive because my wife was going to go with me. It was in the middle of COVID and we didn't want to fly at that time. So we took the road trip to Oklahoma, and it wasn't that bad. It's not that bad of a drive. Later, before I knew I was going to be moving to LA for a year, that's the same route that we were going to take anyway. So I get down there, and the PA that we were working with was fantastic because he had stuff ready to go before I even asked for it, which I think is very important. And he pulled up in the van, and I called him on the way down. I said, look, I want to get the camera set up. And so bring the camera to me tonight, since you just picked up all the equipment. And he shared it with me so that I could go through the camera in my hotel room with my own time and space, so I can see to make sure I had all the settings where I wanted it. Because once we get in the field, you don't have time to do those type of things. And so I had my crash course and my lessons on YouTube, but now it was time to have the camera in, you know, my hotel so I can have all my settings. So it was also the first time that I used the Fujinon 19-90 lens, which is now hands down one of my favorite. It's a beautiful lens. It's really heavy, heavier than anything I had been used to at that point. But there's a reason that it's used on so many projects is because the versatility is great. The image is beautiful and it's just a rock solid lens. And so I had the Fujinon on the Amira. And so I felt pretty confident that night that I had everything that I needed to film the rest of the project. And so the production team had rented two vans. I think it's the Chrysler, whatever van. Everybody uses that van when they rent. I mean, we were rolling around. We didn't have large production vans, you know, white or black vans that you would see like the Sprinter or the Fords. We just had two, you know, not residential, but two family vans that you would see a family do a road trip in. And I started to realize that, you know what? Yes, this is for a big client. This is the largest project that I've done to date. But it was no different than anything I had done in the past. It's the same thing. You go into a room, you find the best setup, you find the best lighting. The director asks the questions. You set up for another interview. You have lunch. You go do it again. You capture some B-roll. And that started to shake the nerves a little bit because I was super nervous going into this project because I was like, I want to do good because I want to film more projects like this. Now, there are areas where there are room for improvement, of course. And part of that was not preparing myself correctly. I should have done better with the lighting, but my lighting game was still, I was still learning at that point. And I didn't have the right equipment. And I didn't have my equipment. Now, I don't need my equipment to light, but I needed certain type of lights to get what I was looking for as far as interviews. So some of my interviews are a little too high key. Some of them ended up turning out great, but you don't know where you're going to be talking with people. And so you need to have different options as far as a hard source, a soft source, different modifiers. And I didn't have everything. And so I was kind of working with my hands behind my back, which made me nervous for this type of project, but I was going to move forward anyway. So we ended up being in Oklahoma. I think we were in Tulsa for 10 days and a lot of it was interview, but we also got to do some verite scenes, which is really my favorite thing to film because you're never looking at your watch. You're always moving and you're following the story with your camera. And so one of my favorite scenes is when we got to film at a radio show. It was the blackest radio show. This is just so black. And I love saying that because it was just some black ass folks talking about some black ass topics in a small radio room. And it was great. And, you know, when doing that type of documentary and you're talking about a very sensitive subject, I think it's important to have people behind the lens that look like the people that reflect in front of the lens. And so I felt like our subjects and our characters and the people that we were talking to were very comfortable, even to the point where there were several other teams doing documentaries down there at the same time. And I don't know what the other teams looked like, but the way they spoke to me was that they were happy to see me because all the other teams didn't have a black team behind the crew necessarily. And so I think that's very important. It allows the people that you're talking with to let their hair down and be comfortable because they know the struggles that I've had in my life represent some of the struggles that they're discussing. And it is not an outside looking in voyeuristic or whatever you would call it, looking into their community. So that was one of my favorite scenes and it ended up turning out very well in the documentary. I think the other thing to keep in mind is everything you film is not going to be, definitely not going to be in the project. There was a lot of scenes that we filmed that I thought were going to be great that didn't make it. You have to be flexible. We had an interview planned with someone that, you know, got into a car accident on the way to come in to film with us. And they were half the day. We were going to be doing an interview with them, a tour with them, and you got to be flexible. And so at that moment, we ran into some students that were having a tour being done for them at the location. We asked them if we can film them. And they were like, yes. So we, you know, we got there, you know, obviously still got to get them to sign off on it because you can't just do that without their permission. That was one of the first projects that I really felt like this story needs to be told on a grand scale. Obviously, it was 100 years later. And it's not that the other stories that I worked on didn't need to be told, but it was very moving discussing and hearing from the people who are still descendants of a lot of the people who dealt with what happened in Tulsa during the massacre. And it just opened up my eyes to what's going on in our country, because it's still a lot of the same stuff. And so being able to be behind the camera for that is why I think I'm here and why I think I do this. As far as using the camera, it was a struggle for me. One of the reasons it was a struggle was because I had a hard time balancing the Easy Rig. The camera was so front heavy that I couldn't get it balanced. And I didn't realize that at that time, but if you can't get your Easy Rig balanced, there's no point of using it. So I was fighting the camera, and that's the last thing that you want to do. If you're in a situation where you're fighting the camera, jump ship and do something else. Go shoulder mount. The other thing was the lens that they sent down. I went through the equipment that they sent, but there were some pieces missing. There were some small screws that were missing to make it so that I had a handle on the lens. And usually I won't use a handle on the lens, but the way it was set up and the way that I had it rigged out, it was kind of mandatory when I was going shoulder mount. And so it made it really hard to use because I had no hand grips or anything. That's why I brought my FX9. I was happy I had my FX9. I didn't end up using it, but I also didn't have my shoulder mount tools. And that's why prep day is so important. So if I were to do that again, I would make it mandatory for us to have a prep day in Oklahoma with all the equipment and then have access to a local rental house to get the extra pieces that we needed. And that's why prep day is so important. So I didn't have that. And so the whole time through those 10 days, I was fighting the camera, and I should have told them we need to make an adjustment because some of my shots were a little shakier than they needed to be because I didn't have everything. The battery solution, I'm glad I brought my batteries because it was we were flying through batteries left and right because the Amira is battery hungry for sure. I'm glad I brought my tripod. I'm a big fan of the Sackler tripod, and it's just I can move very quickly with it. And having that at my disposal allowed me to get a lot of shots in a way that I would say I can't get them with other tripods. It's just a lot easier to have. It's easier to have your gear in general to me because you're not thinking about what you need. I think the important thing when working on projects like this is to give the editor options. You don't know the direction that they're going to be taking in the film, even when they have a direction. And you need to give them different options so that they can pivot, because they're going to pivot in post anyway. And so if you only film exactly what's on the paper, that's going to limit them. There's so much downtime when working on these type of films that I generally like to tell the director, hey, do your thing. Figure out your logistics. Or if someone hasn't shown up, let me go film. And I'll still be in the area. You know, I got my phone, got a walkie. But let me go capture extra content. Let me go capture B-roll. Let me go get creative, because you're going to use some of these shots. And when I looked at the final film, they used a lot of the stuff where I was just on my own and nobody asked me to do it. I just know it's needed, because if I can set up the editor to win, then that editor, that producer, that director is going to say, hey, we need to make sure that we use Eric again because he did a great job. You don't want it the other way around, like he didn't give me enough options. And so I'm always trying to find a way to add value to the project so that they want to bring me back on. I really think the most surprising thing when I got the opportunity to work on this project was it was just not very different from many of the things I worked on previously. So we're wrapping up filming. And one thing that I wanted to get better at was making sure I knew what type of credit I would get, you know, for the project. And so, you know, I reached out to the production company and I was trying to figure out what my credit was going to be on the film. And they were going back and forth and trying to figure that out. And I thought I was going to be a camera op. Maybe they'll title me a cinematographer, but I did not realize that they're going to title me as the DP, which there was two of them. And I mean, with the amount of interviews that we did, I should have been. And I'm glad that they got that correct, because it makes a big difference when you can say that you were a camera operator on something versus you were a DP on something. So, you know, that was the first major project on a major network that I got to DP, and it's given me some validity, so to speak, when people ask me the things that I've worked on. It opened the door to work on a project for ESPN. I've done some other stuff with production companies out in LA, and the level of projects that they want to see their DPs and cinematographers work on, the History Channel falls right into that. And so now people understand that a major network has trusted me to do that project. But what it comes down to is I was in the right place at the right time, and you create your luck, so to speak. And if it wasn't for me filming Freedom Hill with Reseda on a very limited budget, that I wouldn't have been able to work for the History Channel and the Tulsa Massacre of 1921. It wouldn't have happened. And so that means that you got to be working. You got to stay working out there, because one project will lead to another. People want to work with people who are putting in that work. And sometimes the project that you're working on isn't the most beneficial financially, but everybody doesn't need to know that. Everybody doesn't, outside of this, doesn't need to know what I made on Freedom Hill. They know that I put in the work for it. And so if you have the opportunity and you have the time and you have the interest to work on a project and it just doesn't have the right financial numbers, don't get rid of it so quickly, because it might open the door to some other things in the future. And so, you know, being able to sit and watch that documentary with my family on History Channel, that was a great experience. I had to watch it twice, because the first time watching it, I was just like, what shots did they select and what did they film and did this work out? I mean, then I watched it again so I could, you know, capture the story. You know, the interesting thing is there were three different productions going on at the same time within a few weeks of the same story. I know ours was going, History Channel, CNN had one, and I don't know who the third one was. But there was a lot of people filming that story down there at that time. I think maybe Oprah's company, LeBron's company, something like that. It's, you know, an experience I'll never forget. And I'm honored that I had the opportunity, you know, to work on it. And I'm hoping to do many more. But working on that project let me know what my future holds. And it's telling Black stories. Historical Black stories is really where I love to, you know, I love to be there. So some people like to do commercials. Some people like narrative films. I like documentaries about Black people. That's my favorite place to be. I can do that 10 days out of the week. And I'm hoping to do more stories that have an impact on this country's future, because Black history is American history. Hope you enjoy this podcast. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to reach out to me. I'd answer anything that I didn't cover within this episode. Make sure you reach out to me on all the internets and all the social mediums. I'd be happy to converse with you about, you know, what you have going on in your career. And until next time, this is a filmmaker's guide to freelancing. I'm out.